Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The following program is presented under the sponsorship of the Democratic National Committee. The President of the United States makes his first formal address in his campaign for re-election to the presidency, and for this address he has come to the city of Syracuse in his native state of New York. We are speaking to you from the New York State Armory in Syracuse, and this big hall has been packed to overflowing with persons who've come to hear the president. And now we present His Excellency Herbert H. Lehman, Governor of New York, who was renominated this afternoon by this convention for a third term as Chief Executive of the Empire State. The Governor will present the President. Governor Lehman.
Fellow delegates, I have the privilege and the high honor of presenting a former governor of this state, the man who changed despair into hope and confidence and restored prosperity to our country. A great American. The President of the United States.
This is the second tremendous ovation that the president has received since coming to the New York State Armory here in Syracuse. His arrival on the platform a few minutes ago with Mrs. Roosevelt was the signal for an enormous cheering and applause, tremendous ovation. And now he has just been introduced by the governor of New York State. He's waving to the crowd, and his address will start in just one moment.
Governor Lehman, Mayor Thatcher, ladies and gentlemen, from force of long habit, I had almost said my fellow delegates. Tonight, you and I join forces for the 1936 campaign. We are entering it with confidence. Never was there greater need for fidelity to the underlying conception of Americanism than there is today. And once again, it is given to our party to carry the message of that Americanism to the people. The task on our part is twofold. First, as simple patriotism requires, to separate the false from the real issues. And secondly, with facts and without rancor, to clarify the real problems for the American public. I need not tell you that there are many false issues. In that respect, this will be no different from other campaigns. Partisans not willing to face realities will drag out red herrings, as they have always done, to divert attention from the trail of their own weaknesses. And this practice is as old as our democracy, avoiding the facts, fearful of the truth, a malicious opposition charged that George Washington planned to make himself king under a British form of government. That Thomas Jefferson planned to set up a guillotine in every square under the French Revolutionary form of government. That Andrew Jackson soaked the rich of the eastern seaboard. Soaked the rich of the eastern seaboard and planned to surrender American democracy to the dictatorship of a frontier mob. They called Abraham Lincoln a Roman emperor. Theodore Roosevelt, a destroyer. Woodrow Wilson, a self-constituted messiah. And in this campaign, another herring turns up. In former years, it has been British or French and a variety of other things. But this year, it's Russian. Desperate in mood, angry at failure, cunning in purpose, individuals and groups are seeking to make communism an issue in an election where communism is not a controversy between the two major parties. Here and now, once and for all, let us bury that red herring and destroy that false issue. You are familiar with my background. You know my heritage. And you are familiar, especially in the state of New York, with my public service extending back over a quarter of a century. For nearly 4 years, I have been President of the United States. A long record has been written. And in that record, both in this state and in the national capital, you will find a simple, clear, and consistent adherence, not only to the letter, but to the spirit of the American form of government. To that record, my future and the future of my administration will conform. I have not sought, I do not seek, I repudiate the support of any advocate of communism or of any other alien. For any other alienism, which would, by fair means or foul, change our American democracy. That is my position. It always has been my position, and it always will be my position. There is no difference between the two major parties as to what they think about communism. But there is a great difference between the parties in what they do about communism. And I will tell you why. Communism is a manifestation of the social unrest which always comes with widespread economic maladjustment. We in the Democratic Party have not been content merely to denounce this menace. We have been realistic enough to face it. We have been intelligent enough to do something about it. And the world has seen the results of what we've done. In the spring, 3 years and a half ago, in the spring of 1933, we faced a crisis which was the ugly fruit of 12 years of neglect. Neglect of the causes of economic and social unrest. It was a crisis made to order for all those who would overthrow our form of government. Do I need to recall to you the fears of those days? Reports of those who piled supplies in their basements, who laid plans to get their fortunes across the border, who got themselves hideaways in the country against the impending upheaval. Do I need to recall the law-abiding heads of peaceful families who began to wonder as they saw their children starve, how they would get the bread they saw in the bakery window? Do I need to recall the homeless boys who were traveling in bands through the countryside, seeking work, seeking food, desperate because they could find neither? Do I need to recall the farmers who banded together with pitchforks to keep the sheriff from selling the farm home under foreclosure? And do I need to recall... And do I need to recall the powerful leaders of industry and banking who came to me in Washington in those early days of 1933 pleading to be saved? Most people in the United States remember today the fact that starvation was averted, that homes and farms were saved, that banks were reopened, that crop prices rose, that industry revived, and that the dangerous forces of subversion of our form of government were turned aside. A few people, a few only, unwilling to remember, seem to have forgotten those days. In the summer of 1933, a nice old gentleman wearing a silk hat fell off the end of a pier. He was unable to swim. A friend ran down the pier, dived overboard, and pulled him out. But the silk hat floated off with the tide. After the old gentleman had been revived, he was effusive in his thanks. He praised his friend for saving his life. Today, 3 years later, the old gentleman is berating his friend because his silk hat was lost. Why did that crisis from 1929 to 1933 pass without disaster? The answer is found in the record of what we did. Early in the campaign in 1932, I said to meet by reaction that danger of radicalism is to invite disaster. The way to meet that danger is to offer a workable program of reconstruction, and the party to offer it is the party with clean hands. We met the emergency. We met the emergency with emergency action. But far more important than that, we went to the roots of the trouble and attacked the cause of the crisis. We were against revolution, and therefore we waged war against those conditions which make revolution, against the inequalities and the resentments that breed them. In America in 1933, the people did not attempt to remedy wrongs by overthrowing institutions. Americans were made to realize that wrongs could and would be set right within their institutions. We proved that democracy can work. I have said to you that there is a very great difference between the two parties in what they do about communism. Conditions congenial to communism were being bred and fostered throughout this nation up to the very day of March 4, 1933. Hunger was breeding it. Loss of homes and farms was breeding it. Closing banks were breeding it. A ruinous price level was breeding it. Discontent and fear was spreading throughout the land, and the previous national administration, bewildered, did nothing. In their speeches, they deplored it, but by their actions, they encouraged it. The injustices, the inequalities, the downright suffering out of which revolutions come, what did they do about these things? Lacking courage, they evaded. Being selfish, they neglected. Being short-sighted, they ignored. And when the crisis came, as these wrongs made it sure to come, America was unprepared. The lack of preparation for it was best proved by the cringing and the fear of the very people whose indifference helped to make the crisis. They came to us pleading that we should do overnight what they should have been doing through the years. And the simple causes of our unpreparedness were two. First, a weak leadership. And secondly, an inability to see the causes, to understand the reasons for social unrest. The tragic plight of 90% of the men, women, and children who made up the population of the United States. It has been well said that every empire that has crashed has come down primarily because its rulers didn't know what was going on in the world and were incapable of learning. It is for that reason, my friends, that our American form of government will continue to be safest in democratic hands. The real, actual, undercover Republican leadership is the same as it was 4 years ago. That leadership will never comprehend the need for a program of social justice and of regard for the well-being of the masses of our people. I have been comparing leadership in Washington. This contrast between Democratic and Republican leadership holds true throughout the length and breadth of the state of New York. As far back as the year 1910, the old Black Horse Cavalry, which we old people can remember, the old Black Horse Cavalry in Albany was failing to meet changing social conditions by appropriate social legislation. Here was a state noted for its industry, noted for its agriculture, a state with the greatest mixture of population, where the poorest and the richest lived literally within a stone's throw of each other. In short, a situation made to order for potential unrest. And yet in this situation, the best that the Republican leaders of those days could say was, let them eat cake. What would have happened if that reactionary domination had continued through all of these hard years? Starting in 1911, a Democratic leadership came into power, and with it, a new philosophy of government.
I had the good fortune to come into public office at that time. I found other young men in the legislature, men who held the same philosophy. And one of them was Bob Wagner. And another was Al Smith. We were all joined in a common cause. We did not look on government as something apart from the people. We thought of it as something to be used by the people for their own good. New factory legislation, setting up decent standards of safety and sanitation, limitation of the hours of women in industry. Mind you, to 54 hours a week, a workman's compensation law, a one-day rest in seven law, a full train crew law, a direct primary law. These laws and many more that were passed then were called radical and alien to our form of government. Would you or any other Americans call them radical or alien today? In later years, first under Governor Smith and then during my governorship, this program of practical intelligence was carried forward over the typical, every year in and out, unswerving opposition of Republican leaders throughout our state. And today, the great tradition of a liberal, progressive, Democratic Party has been carried still further by our present great governor, Herbert H. Lehman. He has begun a program of social insurance to remove the specter of unemployment from the working people of the state. He has broadened our labor legislation. He has extended the supervision of public utility companies. He has proved himself an untiring seeker for the public good, a doer of social justice. A wise, conscientious, clear-headed, and business-like administrator of the executive branch of our government. And be it noted that his opponents are led and backed by the same forces and in many cases by the same individuals who for a quarter of a century have tried to hamstring progress in this state. The overwhelming majority of our citizens, upstate and downstate, regardless of party, proposed to return him and his administration to Albany for another 2 years. His task in Albany, like my task in Washington, has been to maintain contact between statecraft and reality. In New York and in Washington, government which has rendered more than lip service to our constitutional democracy has done a work for the protection and the preservation of our institutions that could not have been accomplished by repression and force. Let me warn you, and let me warn the nation against the smooth evasion that says, of course we believe these things. We believe in social security. We believe in work for the unemployed. We believe in saving homes. Cross our hearts and hope to die. We believe in all these things. But we do not like the way the present administration is doing them. Just turn them over to us. We will do all of them. We will do more of them. We will do them better. And most important of all, the doing of them will not cost anybody anything. But, my friends, these evaders are banking too heavily on the shortness of our memories. No one will forget that they had their golden opportunity 12 long years of it. And remember, too, that the first essential of doing a job well is to want to see the job done. Make no mistake, though, about this. The Republican leadership today is not against the way we have done the job. The Republican leadership is against the job being done. Look to the source of the promises of the past. Governor Lehman knows, and I know, how little legislation in the interests of the average citizen would be on the statute books of the state of New York and of the federal government if we had waited for Republican leaders to pass it. The same lack of purpose of fulfillment lies behind the promises of today. You cannot be an old guard Republican in the East and a New Deal Republican in the West. You cannot promise to repeal taxes before one audience and promise to spend more of the taxpayers' money before another audience. You cannot promise tax relief for those who can afford to pay and at the same time promise more of the taxpayers' money for those who are in need. You simply cannot make good on both promises at the same time. Who is there in America who believes that we can run the risk of turning back our government to the old leadership which brought it to the brink of 1933? Out of the strains and the stresses of these years, we now come to see that the true conservative is the man who has a real concern for injustices. The true conservative seeks to protect the system of private property and free enterprise by correcting such injustices and inequalities as arise from it. The most serious threat to our institution comes from those who refuse to face the need for change. Liberalism becomes the protection for the far-sighted conservative. Never has a nation made greater strides in the safeguarding of democracy than we have made during these past 3 years. Wise and prudent men, intelligent conservatives, have long known that in a changing world, worthy institutions can only be conserved by adjusting them to the changing times. In the words of the great essayist, the voice of great events is proclaiming to us, reform if you would conserve. I am that kind of a conservative because I am that kind of a liberal.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard the President of the United States speaking before the fourth and final session of the New York State Democratic Convention. This was Mr. Roosevelt's first political address in his campaign for re-election to the presidency. He was introduced by Governor Herbert H. Lehman of the Empire State, and the entire broadcast originated in the New York State Armory in Syracuse, New York. This program, sponsored by the Democratic National Committee, has come to you through the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.
The National Broadcasting Company wishes to thank the Mole Company and the American Can Company for their courtesy in relinquishing their broadcast periods this evening over some of these stations in order that you might have heard the program just concluded.